Them Podcast with Landon McCool.
How about them Cowboys indeed?
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the How About Them Podcast. I am your host, Landon McCool. And we are 5 days? Is that what we are? Is it 5 or 6 days? It's 5 days as I record this podcast. Until the opening ceremonies of Dallas Cowboys training camp. I could not be more excited. I am made my plans. I've taken my days off this first week, so I'm going to get to be able to spend hopefully the whole first week there. I'm going to talk all about kind of my past experiences, what I look forward to, and give you some tips of the trade for those of you who are making it down there, and kind of just give you an idea of what it's like to go down there if you haven't ever been down there before. But first, we're going to do some check with me's on some news updates. So let's get started with that, shall we?
180! 180! Kill, kill, kill!
All right, so clearly we need to do a quick check-in on some of the news surrounding the team. Some of it more serious and long-term than the other. First, leading off, obviously, the Zeke situation with the allegations of aggravated assault at a club on McKinney in downtown Dallas. The more I hear about what's going on, the more that I get concerned about potential issues in the future. I've heard a lot of whispers and people coming talking to me, on Twitter and sending me notes and stuff about some things, and it's all kind of secondhand information. It's hearsay, to the point where I don't even want to necessarily repeat it. But the common theme here is that it does seem to generally be, that this maybe this particular situation isn't going to kill him, but it's indicative of maybe a larger problem which could become could rear its ugly head down the road. Just to kind of get to the details of this, there's several different reports, so I'm not even going to try to get into all the different variations of what could have happened, but I will say that somebody at a club that Zeke Elliott was attending got punched in the nose with a broken nose, was taken to a hospital. The victim claims that it was Zeke who hit him, or at least claimed at one point that Zeke was hit him. That is all that is known. Now, there are several different conflicting reports about what people saw. That's all well and good, I'm sure. I'm sure that money will be exchanged. All these parties involved apparently kind of know each other, including the victim and Zeke and the owner of the club and the Joneses. So I have a feeling that a lot of this is going to be kind of just quietly taken care of. I think that there's still an overhanging potential detriment to a league suspension that could come just because they don't need any hard evidence to suspend him, at least for a game or two. What I would maybe start to get a little concerned about is there a larger behavioral problem with Zeke that is going on? And I'm not even necessarily talking about him being a guy who likes to party. I think that there is, the nature of what's going on is really the whispers that are scary. So I don't want to get into that particular speculation, but I do want to give you a heads up that I am hearing some stuff that doesn't sound great. And because it's rumorish, I don't want to give specifics because it's all hearsay. But I will say that it does kind of point towards a larger problem that means that this may end up rearing its head again later. Hopefully not. Hopefully this is the kind of scared straight or shot across the bow moment that Zeke needed to kind of get some more help with some of the stuff that's going on. Until then, I think, at least maybe be aware that there could be something brewing, and there could be more bad situations on the horizon if there isn't an attitude adjustment or a at least social behavior adjustment on Zeke's part. All right, so let's talk some training camp, shall we? I was trying to remember. I've been doing this for about, I think this will be my fifth or sixth year. I can't remember exactly the first year I went, but I've been doing this for a couple years now, and it's changed as it's gone on. I mean, I'm not trying to sound like, man, it's really different. When I first got there, I would walk up and shake Troy Aikman's hand. No, I mean, they kind of, as time has gone on, they've rearranged the kind of practice field as they've used it, and that's sort of changed how you actually attack viewing things. And then, I think also in that process, I think that they've made adjustments in their kind of methodology here. I think the interesting thing that's to keep in mind here is that we're getting the extra week due to the Hall of Fame game and the Cowboys participating in that. But I tend to still believe that what they really want to do is kind of continue to get a pattern, a rhythm that's similar to what they can get the in season week schedule as they can. But I think that it's they still have to also make adjustments on the fly, deferred depending on how their preseason schedule, preseason game schedule lays out and travel times and all that stuff. So, I would say the first thing that I would recommend if you are making the trip to Oxnard, and I don't want to be the person to promote a product that is not paying me for such, but I would definitely recommend that if you can afford it, to get the Dallas Cowboys United, or whatever they are calling their Cowboys fan club this year. I think this year it's still called Dallas Cowboys United or whatever. I think they have two different levels. One that's like a $50 a year plan, which basically means you're paying $50, you get all the other benefits of whatever the Cowboys United is. I don't know how much it is. I mean, I think you get discounts on purchasing and stuff like that. But ultimately, what it does at Oxnard is that it gives you an extra level of access that's down to the fences where you can get really close. And honestly, especially if you're going multiple days, it's so worth it, because you get a lot better view. And again, I think if you're the kind of person that's listening to this podcast, you're the kind of person that wants to get in close and watch this stuff. So I would definitely recommend paying the $50. And man, if you can afford the $300, do it. You get to go close like the other one, like the United regular upgrade. But then I think on top of that, you also get access to kind of the press pool area, which is a little bit closer to kind of where they do some of the goal line stuff, and it's just a little bit even further access. I don't really know if it's totally worth the $300, but if you're just out there having a good time and you can spend it, do it, man. Because you get a little. I think you get some food out of it. They serve you a meal or whatever every day. So I got a chance to do it one time just because someone helped me out, and it was really great. It was a lot of fun. I just don't know that I could pay the extra money for it, or want to pay the extra money for it. If someone else is paying for it, I'm definitely going. You'll find that there are generally three types of people at this thing, and really, you will see the first group, which is the Cowboys fans that are there to see their team practice, and even those guys, you could kind of break into subgroups of based on how what their varying levels of intensity and viewing practices. I don't want to say like the more intense people are the bigger fans, but I think that there are definitely people that are obviously diehard fans that are there to see their team practice, but are also not necessarily like so versed in what they're seeing that they need to watch it so intently. So they kind of just are there generally to see the big plays and, you know, hey, Romo, or I guess not Romo anymore, but, you know, yell at the players and be positive and all that, which is great. I mean, I'm not, you know, diminishing that at all. But the reason I'm separating that is because I think when you can kind of identify the different groups, it kind of helps you, helps guide you to where to go, to stand, to watch things. And I think that's kind of one of the key things is really identifying your first day, how everything works, how the practice goes. And then that should kind of set the tone for how you adjust your schedule for the following day. So back to what I was saying, the three types of people are the Cowboys fans who are there to see their team practice with varying levels of intensity. There are Cowboys fans there that are literally just there to get autographs. So they basically will just get down to the fence near the area of where the Cowboys players will be coming in and going out and just yelling at their names and then holding up memorabilia. They're really not hard to find. But you will know that that's not necessarily the best spot for watching practice, A, because it's not necessarily a great angle wherever they come in, and B, there's going to be a ton of people there who are not really watching practice, so you're probably not going to be able to get a good spot on that area, even if you wanted to, without getting there crazy early, because the autograph people get there really early in order to fight for a good spot to get signatures. So avoid that area if what you're trying to do is watch foot practice. And then the third kind of group of people are usually that are there for the spectacle of what's going on and not so much there for the Cowboys or for football practice or any of that stuff. And a lot of times these are locals who may not even be Cowboys fans. And obviously I'm generalizing some more, but like I said, the reason I bring it up is because these groups, as you are able to kind of identify them, will kind of help guide you as, okay, where are the people that are watching, intently watching practice, and where are they standing? And then that, you know, that's kind of where you're going to allow that to be your guide, you know? And the other thing about it is that the people that are there for the spectacle, if you can kind of identify them, they actually will lead you to the other stuff, which is the stuff that actually does kind of move around season to season, which is, you know, the concession stands, the bathroom stuff, the, you know, all the ancillary stuff to the actual practice, like the practice. The spectacle folk, the locals, are the ones usually that are, you know, running the concession stands or trying to sell Gatorades and stuff like that. So there's all tons and tons of that stuff. So just, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But the reason, again, like I bring it up, is that if you are going for multiple days, watching these people it will kind of help give you an idea for the following days of where you need to be going in order to see what you want to see. And I think that it's really important to kind of have a plan of attack if you really want to try and see everything. This is definitely one of those situations, and as someone who's done this at the request of other people, who are people who have put in requests for me to look at something or to document something, I will tell you right now that is so much going on and so many different units and pods that will be practicing all simultaneously, that if you don't really have an idea of what you're trying to watch, that you can kind of get lost in the, you know, you can't see the forest for the trees, and it's really kind of difficult to get into a good position to see what you want to see from a good angle and then really identify what you're looking at. So I would, like I said, you definitely want to watch the kind of practice from a 10,000 feet, get the use of the kind of rhythm of what they're doing, and then plan accordingly on how you're going to bounce around. So, you know, I would recommend getting close to the fence near whatever position group you plan on like viewing, because usually the kind of rhythm of what they're doing is that they'll do special teams practices up front, and then they'll do kind of pod work, which can either be positional group or combinations of positional groups working on an aspect together, like run fits and run defense, or route combinations with the defensive backs and the wide receivers and the tight ends. So I would say kind of get an idea of what you want to look at. And then once they start breaking from special teams, hopefully you can have an idea of where that pod or position group that you're going to be paying attention to will be on the field. You can start making your way there. And that's when I would say you should get on the fence, get close, and get ready for whenever they break off. Then they'll come to you if you know where they're going, and then and that kind of because what the rhythm of it is, if you know where the people that you want to watch are going, when everyone breaks from stretching, you will already be at your spot in the fence that you need to be in order to, you know, have get a good angle of what they're doing, and then they'll just break from stretching. The players just break from stretching, and the pod will walk to where you are. And then as that's happening, you'll see a group of unknowing training camp folks who weren't informed like I'm informing you. I'll say, oh, they're practicing over there. Okay, honey, we got to go over there and point to where you are, but you're already sat in your spot loving life because you know you planned ahead. You saw where the guys are going to be. And you're where you need to be, and everyone else can just line up behind you, and you can just enjoy yourself. So that's what I would do up front. Now, once they start getting through the pods, they end up kind of getting into larger groups sometimes, and then doing like 7-on-7 work, sometimes 11-on-11 work, and scrimmage stuff. Once they start doing like real like 11-on-11 scrimmages, I mean, and they do these at varying speeds. So a lot of times with the 11-11 and 7-7 stuff, it's like 3/4 speed. So it's definitely interesting, but it's also not like always evaluation worthy, more than it is like just interesting to see how people are lining up and how the order of the positions go, like the depth chart. So I would recommend that once the pods start breaking, getting into larger groups, and they start getting closer to 7-7 on 11-11 stuff, which happens near the end of practice, you should start making your way back up to the bleachers and try to get up near the top of the bleachers so you can get a good angle. And that will give you a good view of the 11-11, 7-on-7 groups from a good angle, that actually like almost a game film angle from the sideline. So that's really probably the way to attack it. That's the way I've done it the last few years. And I think that that's it's been successful to me. For me, because I go in with a plan of attack. I know what I want to see, and then once I get, once I get to my spot, and then they break and they come to me, I can get good views of that section, and then still make it to where I need to go to get a kind of overhead view, overall view of the team periods or the competition periods. Speaking of those. Sprinkled in between a lot of these pods will be what they call literally competitive periods, which I threw that term around a little too loosely when I was discussing 7-on-7 and 11-11. But the actual competitive periods are often are basically just one-on-one situations. So what will happen, and sometimes Garrett will call out maybe two at a time to compete at the same time, but usually what it is, Garrett gathers the entire team, and we'll call out two kind of evenly matched players that one offense, one defense, to go against each other in front of the whole team. So the whole team kind of circles around it, and they all watch, and they get to get that opportunity. And they don't do it. It's not necessarily like always Zach Martin versus Malik Collins. It's whomever versus Tyron Smith. Like they'll do the third string center versus a third string defensive tackle every once in a while too. So it really is a great chance. With pride on the line, as well as potentially a job, depending on who these guys are, it really is a fantastic opportunity to get a really good evaluation on these guys. And it's oftentimes these one-on-ones, these competitive reps against each other, are oftentimes as close as you're going to get or at least the best reps of for evaluation, because it's the closest you're going to get to live competitive football in these practices. And then finally, for guys that are looking for stuff to do before and after, you want to maybe see some of the local, some of the bloggers, your Cowboys bloggers and writers and people that you may know from Twitter and that sort of thing. I have found that I know a lot of bloggers often use that Whole Foods near the training camp complex. It's literally like a mile down the road. It's kind of a pre-practice meeting ground, and there's usually a restaurant in there that writers will kind of sometimes go in there and use the Wi-Fi and kind of do reports before they head in. So I would definitely take a look there, and then after practice, later on in the evenings, the Rudder Room is the spot to be if you want to see some of the Dallas folks who have made it into town and they're looking to wet their whistle and go get a drink, you're definitely going to see some of the fun-loving guys down at the Rudder Room. So that is definitely a spot to check out if you're in Oxnard. And guys, I'll throw, make sure that you're checking out, speaking of, my Twitter account, because you're going to have all, I'm going to have all kinds of updates on what I'm seeing, video. I'm sure I'll do some Periscope stuff. So check me out at McCoolBTB on Twitter, and make sure you're following FanRagSports.com for updates on what's going on across the league in all these training camps, and as well as the Cowboys specifically. So until next week, yeah, hopefully we'll have a couple more episodes next week, obviously, because of what's going on with all this. So I will have a lot of great information for you guys. And I'm look forward to sending it your way. So until then, happy trails, everybody.